Leader and the Rude. My name is Jeff Kreisler. I am the author of the book Get Rich Cheating, and I am the cheater, I suppose. My normal co-host, Lee Papa, is out fighting fires and crime and all sorts of badness in the world, and I am joined by a good friend and a very wise and funny man, Mr. Barry Weintraub. Barry Weintraub,
how
say
do,
hello.
How do? And thank you for letting me, sir. I'll try to be as rude as I can be.
You know what? You are a Yankee fan. I trust it's in your blood.
Yeah, neither one of us is going to be talking baseball in a proud light right now, so we could see if we get around to that. But
yeah.
What do you normally do on this show? We normally talk about the politics, do we not?
Yeah, it's politics. I mean, we can make baseball a metaphor for politics if you want. By the way, I am a Red Sox fan, although I think I'm on Barry's team, that this is a bridge year for both of us. Can we use that term, a bridge year? Is that a soft way of saying
I'm not ready to completely throw in the towel. I do have a $32 million singles hitter, so, you know, things aren't totally lost.
That's true, and I've got a couple of overpaid former potential aces.
But,
and that's somehow like our political system.
And we have excellent young players that are permanently disabled, so we have that as well.
Yeah, this is somehow someone smarter with more time can make an analogy to how that represents a political system that's funded by old rich men and young people who don't really have a voice despite being 99% of them and blah blah blah. But it's not
I look at what the Red Sox are doing as a war on women.
And
anywhere else in Massachusetts, actually.
In many ways, it is. It is a war on women in the sense that it makes me sad, and I go out sad. And what am I talking about? I'm married with a kid, so I don't even know what women look like anymore. Where are you calling us from?
I'm calling you from Portland, Maine. Never been here before.
It's beautiful up there.
I have discovered, though, that Portland itself, the entire downtown, would be the tourist trap. So I have to find out exactly where you go to get out of the tourist trap area.
Well, when we're done with this call, I have a couple friends up there, and there are some good places to have a beverage. And I've heard, I know good things about it. And you could go for a little historical tour on your way back. We once stopped in Kennebunk, which, as you know, is an old bush stompy ground, but it's beautiful, and they have wonderful seafood.
On the schedule, we will be doing the Kennebunk. Now, from what I could tell, just walking the streets of Portland, Maine, this is not only Obama territory, but if Karl Marx were to make a run, I think he'd do very well in this part of the world. But you're not going to see a lot of Mitt Romney votes in downtown Portland.
Which is ironic, because Maine is the one that has that governor who took like the mural of workers off of the Department of Labor because.
Yeah, and his answer to the poverty is to get let those poor people get a job because the whole reason that people are poor is they don't want to work. Nobody wants to work. And teachers are problems, and unions have destroyed the country. And I don't think there's any question about that. Barack Obama is a socialist, if you don't count the guy in France. And I think the answer to the future is more tax cuts for the people at the top and, take a cleaver to the small 15% of the budget that services 90% of the American people. Where's the problem?
You have a bright future in office. Speaking of France, there was a video this week. Will Smith was doing his worldwide tour that I guess you get to do when you are the entertainment industry. For whatever his latest movie is, Men in Black Fight Aliens or something. And he was on a friend's show, and they were asking him about, taxes in America and how we have this socialist president now. And he said, America's the only place I can become the success that I am. And, if they want to have me pay a little more, I totally, want to do that. I want to support the country that made me possible. And then the guy goes, our new president has considered, a 75% tax on people, whatever. Will Smith, in his worst acting ever, just goes, what? It was great. People love. He said, "God bless America" was his response.
Yeah, God bless America. But people don't get. Right now, if you're making $368,000 and above, you're paying 38% federal, and with your local taxes and your county taxes, chances are you're up around 50% total. But what people forget is that as recently as the 70s, people were paying 70% in the top bracket. And in the 60s, in the late 50s, they were paying 90%.
Right, and that was the good old days. That was the time that people reminisced about with Mitt and June Cleaver. You know,
right. Now, let's be intellectually honest. At that point in time, Europe had been destroyed, Japan had been destroyed, and America was the one economic superpower, granted. But what we learned is, even if you tax people at 90%, if they see a profit out there, they kept working. They kept making money.
Right.
That's
the argument that I have really had trouble with. You know Eric Bolling. He's Eric Bolling. He's on the Fox He's the latest wannabe Glenn Beck. He's on, I don't know what network he's on. We used to do this online show. I think he did too, on FoxNews.com. And I would do it with him. And we always had these arguments about this idea of like the marginal tax increase. You know, people always say, oh, if you take that 5% tax and you bump it up to 38%, people are going to stop investing. It's just ludicrous. Because use common sense. If you have an opportunity to make $1 million, and suddenly that same opportunity is only going to give you $900,000, are you going to turn it down? No.
Exactly. It's
if it goes from a million to negative.
It's never been proven. It's as bogus as the argument that the tax cuts for the wealthy are going to create jobs. Last time I did, I fill in on that radio show every now and then. And the last time I did it, I read from the Wall Street Journal, which last I checked was not a bastion of liberal hyperbole. And it was a piece about how big corporations are doing just fine, better than ever.
Record profit.
They have more money in the bank right now than they did in 2007. They're not hiring new people. They're squeezing more out of the new people. And I was discussing it with a guy who accused me of being a socialist and a liar, you know, just for reading the facts from the Wall Street Journal.
Yeah.
That's what I find funny. When you meet the opposition, I mean, you and I are like-minded, and I would suppose your listeners are similarly minded, otherwise they wouldn't tune in. But when you really engage the opposition, they don't even want to hear the facts. They refuse to accept what the facts are.
Yeah. Well, look, it's been I've called it on the show and elsewhere. It's sort of like the Frankenstein monster that the right has over generations created: a distrust of the media, a distrust of education, a distrust of civic involvement, a distrust of people who disagree with them to such vitriol that they are, you know, unpatriotic and they're foreigners and all this stuff, that you can't engage in a discussion of facts. I mean, you know, I'm happy to hear facts that counter my position, but you cannot present them to the other side. I mean, there's, you know.
Well, I found myself in a New York City bar last night, which I actually don't do, but a buddy of mine is a regular and happened to be out. I popped in, and sure enough, he was there. And he introduced me to a fellow, and then halfway through the conversation, he says, oh, and he's a Tea Party guy. And it's like, the last place I want to start talking politics is a place where they're doing shots. But I bit, and we start, you know, we get into this discussion on taxes, and I try to make the point to him that we've just discussed how they've been historically much, much higher. And he says, I don't want to hear it. You're making this stuff up. It's just not true. And then he starts accusing Obama of raising his taxes. Now, Obama has cut taxes.
Taxes are down.
Don't accept that.
Taxes are down. It's the same with, you know, unemployment. You know, that we've improved employment, you know, it's not as much as we want, but there's such a false information out there. People hear what they want to hear to justify, you know, it's the opposite of the scientific method. It's, you know, people have a conclusion they want, which tends to be a black and white, like, I am Republican, I am Democrat, and they ignore facts that prove it otherwise.
You talk about the cheater and the rude. You know, Mitt Romney, in many senses, embodies both of those. And I have to say, you know, he's out there making this case. They're making this case that women have lost their jobs under Barack Obama. And it's, again, intellectually dishonest. First of all, the lion's share of that loss happened in the first 6 months when the momentum of the Bush economy was its greatest. Second of all, the right wing is the one that keeps fighting to fire the public sector. They want to eliminate all government jobs.
And that's
and
mostly female.
Right, women hold those jobs. I'm not going to pretend to tell you what the numbers are, but I would almost guess 3-1, you know.
Without all the public sector layoffs that have come almost exclusively from Tea Party and Republican-controlled states, our unemployment would be 7.1%. I remember seeing that stat recently, 7.1 instead of 8.1.
That makes sense.
Still too high.
The private sector, yeah, it's still too high, but it's moving in the right direction, and they refuse to accept that their plan, which was massive tax cuts, which were supposed to generate growth of the economy, was an abject failure. And they'll tell you, well, we had 9/11, we had two wars, the wars were off budget, and you know, stuff happens. And you can't make a plan without allowing for stuff happening. But, you know, all of the things that are good, Bush is doing,
right,
and killing Osama bin Laden as Bush is doing, and if there's anything bad, it's because Obama's half-black, half-white.
Well, here's what I don't understand from the kind of alleged party of business is two things. First of all, wouldn't a real businessman see the value in investing in the future and investing in structural things, whether that's literally stuff like roads and railroads and energy independence, or education and children and healthy, you know, workers and consumers? Like, put it in economic terms, the poor people that you're letting slip through the cracks, those are the people that might end up having to resort to crime, or that, you know, are going to be unqualified workers for you or consumers, and yet they don't think long term. It's sort of a trickle over effect from, you know, what I wrote about in my book about this, the short term gains being all that matters. You know, these CEOs that have everything tied to stock price, so they don't care how things go for 10 years, it's how they go for 3 months.
Right.
And
well,
everybody thinks
in a greater sense, that's what this next election is about. Because, you know, if we wind up with an all-Republican government, what you're going to see is a very, very short-term benefit for the wealthiest and a long-term disaster for the rest of us. Which is what we're experiencing now.
Right. Which is, well, it's already, yeah, it's already going on a little, but it's, that's the other thing that I question and I wonder is there some plan for everybody to, like, leave? Because it's like the plan of, let me get as much as I can, let me suck everything out of this country that I can. Well, it's sort of a fine business plan if you're a vulture. It's bound to lead to chaos and collapse. I mean, if you're going to remove everything possible, yeah, you'll get yours, and you can build a nice little compound and gated community, you know, until the poor manage to program their own drones and get after you. But, you know, my point is, like, what's their plan? Like, the people that hoard all the money, that are sucking everything out of it, what are they going to do when their actions have made it so everything else is in chaos?
Right, they're not creating jobs. You know, it's a fallacy. I love the one, well, I can't hire someone because I don't know what the health care plan or the taxes are going to be in the future. I had a guy call me, and he says he runs a limo company, and I called him on it. I said, you run a limo company. If you get too many calls, more calls than you have personnel for, you're going to hire someone. You're not going to worry about the tax implications because you're losing business if you don't hire someone. And he's just like, oh, hubbada, 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 hubbada. You know, it's baloney. Those who aren't hiring are just simply not hiring because their business isn't doing well, not because they're paralyzed by not knowing what the future is going to be.
But we know their business isn't doing well, or they're benefiting from changes in technology or changes in, like, open markets for labor that is either a benefit, like a technology, a benefit of investment in that technology, which they would never allow, or, you know, the old argument that the people have made, like, yeah, I'm a wealthy private businessman, but I got that way because of public roads and public education, and it's like public goods have just been so demeaned that, you know, people should spend some more time in parks together, holding hands, listening to Cheater and the Rude.
And singing Kumbaya. Now, do we plow right through? Do we have breaks on your show?
We don't need a break. Do you need a break? It's a 30-minute show. What time is it? We're over halfway there.
So let me ask you this. I want to come back to this, the Cheater and the Root all with Romney. Now, the story that came out last week, which didn't make a huge ripple in the water, about him at school, Cranbrook. Right, where four or five guys who were involved vividly remember the event. The survivors of the victim's family say he never forgot it. And Mitt Romney supposedly was the one who took scissors to a guy's hair and cut it. Now, I'm not actually that upset about what Mitt Romney did when he was 16 or 17 years old, but what I find really appalling is the fact that he believes he could say he doesn't remember it and not continue to raise questions about his ability to be honest with the American people. Because if he doesn't remember traumatizing someone and cutting his hair off, you know, probably the greatest accomplishment of his bully life, he's just flat out a liar. And that's
the scary thing is either he's got an honesty problem, or that act was so in character for him. You know, so was not such a thing that seems so out of character to Mitt Romney that he actually doesn't remember. Like, for instance, I shouldn't eat pizza after midnight. I've known forever it's a bad thing, but I've done it so many times I could not recall a single specific time I had a slice of pizza after midnight. Has Mitt Romney done so many things in his life, whether it's actually holding someone down and cutting their hair or just acting in that mindset, that these one specifics don't stick out? To me...
I follow you, but... from what I've read around me, that was kind of an atypical situation.
A high watermark for his douchiness, if you will?
Yeah, and there's a former, or maybe he's still a current comic, I used to work with years ago who wrote a piece on, and posted it around the country a few days ago because he went to the same school 2 years after. And he said everyone at that school was just douchey, and they always paid their viciousness backwards. You know, they suffered it, and they found someone, and they took it out on them, and that's the way it worked in that school.
Right.
So,
well, you know what's interesting? Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, so it's just more likely than not that he completely remembers it and thinks he could say he just doesn't remember it and move on. But that he's a liar. He's not honest about anything.
Well, I'll tell you, let me tell you what bothered me about the incident. And then last week we did a replay of the show, so I didn't think I talked about it. But, you know, I went to Exeter, which is one of the top prep schools, and, you know, I was in that type of world. Admittedly, it was a different era. And there was hazing, you know, like there's hazing almost anywhere. You know, it never arose to the level of holding someone down or violence. You know, it was typically, you know, stuff like we cut out magazine letters and made a fake ransom note that said to this guy, you know, we're going to get you, or, you know, we did, this one guy had like 400 CDs, and so we rearrange all the CDs in different cases. You know, stuff that's cruel on some level, but different. But the key difference to me, and I think you can recognize my point here as a political comic, is the people that we attacked, I'll put that label on myself, but the people that we hazed were people like one guy was, I don't want to point out who the people were, but they were from very wealthy family, like top of industry family, and they were super entitled, and we were trying to bring them to our level and welcome them to our group in a way by knocking them down a peg. And it was sort of a political comic that attacks authority is much funnier than the authority attacking the ones below. And that to me is what was disturbing about Romney's incident is most of the hazing I ever witnessed in my various places, not that I say it's right, but it tended to be welcoming people into a community by knocking them down a peg, as opposed to excluding people who were already outliers and doing so in a way of
ridicule. This was like real Animal House stuff. You know, the fraternities, the snooty fraternities trying to take it out on the people who were below them.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, it's such a classic 80s bad guy type move, you know?
But
80s movie
again,
bad
guy. It's very instructive as to who this guy is. And it, you know, we got to pay attention. I think right now the odds of Mitt Romney become president are still 50-50.
Really?
He's taking a lead in the state of Florida, depending upon which polls you look at. He's either slightly ahead or fractionally behind in Wisconsin.
He's got the money to firebomb these states like he did in the primary with ads. I mean, that's the saddest thing to me is the sway of ads. I've posted something immediately. It was on Twitter, so who cares? But it's something effective. You know, let's not forget, advertisement's goal is to sell you something, not to, like, spread truth. You know, like, people, you know, the fact that who can buy the most ads is the key lead item in every political analysis is just sort of gross.
I'm reminded that when I was a college graduate and I went to a temp agency, they wanted me to be an ad man, and I was too idealistic. I couldn't try to sell people stuff they didn't need. I wasn't interested.
Mm-hmm.
I was looking back was one of many horrible decisions I've made in my life.
Exactly.
We haven't got the time to go into it here. This is Shooter on the Road, not the doctor and the patient. So.
No. Listen, this has been a place for a lot of couch lying down and lamenting. So if you want to have Conan Chrysler hear the lamentations of... That's a terrible stretch of a quote of a Conan movie. Not Conan O'Brien.
All right, so here's one for you. It's a headline you see all the time, and I saw one the other 2 weeks ago. Is Obama an American? And then the first sentence was, this is not about birth certificates. And I was looking, I just focused on that lead. Is Obama an American? And for the first time in a long time, I decided to really think it through. And here's what I came up with. You know, he's very well educated. He tries to make informed and pragmatic decisions. And he's not obesely overweight. Maybe he's not an American.
This is true. This is why people don't like Michelle Obama's plan to get people in shape.
Well, I'm just saying, you know, this is a fat and increasingly dumb and rash nation. So, you know, when a guy demonstrates all of the opposite characteristics, maybe that explains why a lot of folks feel he ain't from around here, is he, boy? I don't know.
Yeah.
He's a tough one to defend, but he's the only one we've got, so...
Well, what I find interesting so far in the campaign is there's this sort of early skirmish to define Romney, whether it's about Bain or his bullying past, and the efforts to sort of tear down Obama so far by the right have been based upon old things, you know, birtherism, and today they trotted out Reverend Wright and all this old stuff.
After 4 years and the previous 2 to 3 years of campaigning, it's harder to come up with new stuff, and that's kind of the power of incumbency. He's kind of weathered the storm on most of it. So
hopefully, but, you know, there are plenty of crazies out there. I mean, well, what I find really fascinating, I haven't heard in a little while, was did you remember this thread of, oh, Obama's just waiting until his second term when he doesn't have to face election to whatever it is, take away your guns or make everyone get gay married? Or I mean, it's just, it's that type of, if someone has that logic, you can't come back to them and say, well, why wouldn't he just do it his first term when he has all the power? Why would he even risk waiting if that's his real agenda? You can't do that reasoning with people. And yet, this is done. It kind of ends up what happening at some point in the show. I just don't even bother. I can't even finish the sentences because it's just frustrating. It's, you know, like I still have this ideal and delusion of a country where people think things at least 2 or 3 steps through. Not necessarily all the way through, but at least 2 or 3 steps. And
oh, yeah, that country's name is Estonia. It's a small little place in the Balkans. Yeah, you're not going to see that happening. Here, we think less and less, as a matter of fact, thinking is the brand or is a sure sign that you're not a real true American.
It's so frustrating. Do you remember... You remember in like 2007, 8, and 9, there was this moment. Hey, I think we might have talked about this. I knew it wouldn't happen, but it's like, you know, shit is really bad. Like, maybe we can all take a second to assess where we're at. Of course that didn't happen. You know, it was Mitch McConnell saying, my goal is to get Obama one-term president, even though his goal is actually to run the minority in the Senate. It's, you know, it's the Tea Party movement going against progress or not contributing. Everything is the no, and the kill. Like, can't these guys, like, join? Again,
they're convinced that their freedom is under attack, that their government is spending too much. They want to shut down the Energy Department. They want to shut down the Education Department. Okay, well, both of those departments perform numerous vital jobs, so what's going to happen? Are we no longer going to administrate all of the vast areas that energy administrates, or administrate anything about education?
Right.
Or,
well, see, that's to me the Frankenstein monster that is rearing its head, because, like, the right has used that rhetoric forever to get people fired up to vote for them. But now we're seeing those people that have heard that rhetoric forever start to be elected officials. Like this guy Murdoch, who just won the nomination, and he beat Lugar in Indiana. He has said on TV, like, my idea of compromise is people agreeing with me.
With me, and that's right. And it'll be very interesting to see with Indiana, the state that gave us the Ku Klux Klan, if they actually vote now for that or for a Democrat.
But it's like we have, you know, it's again this lack of long-term vision. For so long, the right has used these kind of bugaboos and these Frankenstein or these, you know, what's not scarecrow, straw men, all these things they've said to, for their own political gain to scare people. And now people that believe these things are coming into power. And you can see the Republican Party, the moderates of the world, are just getting slaughtered, and
they're
they don't know what to do.
It's a great graphic, CBS News a few months ago. They did a colored graphic. They covered 3 years. They started in the 1980, and they picked something in the 90s and now. And basically, the first year they showed the makeup of the Senate, there was equal blue, red, and purple. Equal. And then they showed it 10 or 15 years later, and there was much more blue and red and much less purple. And then they showed it last year, and there were not even two people that were purple in the Senate. There is no center. We have no center, which is why these Tea Partiers brought us to the brink last time, created a crisis when it came to the budget, wound up not getting anything done in their so-called super committee, agreed to drastic defense cuts, and now they're trying to, of course, back out on those. And from what I'm reading, and not closely in the last 2 days, Boehner is prepared to do this again.
Yeah, that's kind of the idea, is it's hostage-taking of the worst order. Listen, we have about a minute left. I think we've adequately covered the pessimism. can you tell me something nice you did today? Was there any like pretty view or a sunset you saw?
Well, I drove all day, and it was a beautiful drive. And you know, my car is a '97 Jeep Cherokee, and the wife would not allow me to drive that car, so we had to rent a car. And it was just fun to be in the 21st century. You know, it tells you how many miles you've got, your average, you know, when you're arriving. I was like, wow.
Windows down?
No, air conditioning. It was crazy. It was like living in the future. It was like traveling to the future for me.
Well, I hope you have a good time. Do shoot me an email. I'll try to think of some people. How long are you in Portland for?
We're going to be up here a few days.
Okay, if you're thinking about it, shoot me an email. But the listeners don't have to do that. Giselle, you want to start our goodbye music? I am Jeff Kreisler, and this has been Cheater in the Rude. Joining me, my special guest today was...
Barry Weinstein, having a pleasure. Thank you.
Barry, you got anything to pitch? How about that divorce show that's been going well? You want to mention that?
We got the divorce show. I'm in the City of the Comic Strip next week, and I'll be doing that other radio show on Memorial Day.
Cool. Cheater in the Rude on the Progressive Radio Network every Thursday at 8. Stay tuned, everyone, for the final edition of Radio Hour starting in about 60 seconds.